everyone. Welcome back to Gateway Episodes. This is a special bonus episode we're doing here between seasons of Gateway Episodes. I'm going to try to do this every so often when there's a new show or just an episode of a TV show that I think we should particularly should talk about. And the show that has really caught my interest in the past couple months has been Poker Face. And so I decided to see if I could take my good friend and my co-host from the underrated podcast through the gateway into the show, and that would be Alan Torres. How's it going, Alan?
Hey, what's up, man? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being on. Like I was saying, this is going to be covering the season one episode of Gateway Episode, specifically episode 8, The Orpheus Syndrome. For anyone who isn't familiar, this is the Peacock show that is kind of showrun, and a lot of episodes or a few episodes are directed by Rian Johnson, and it stars Natasha Lyonne. This is kind of a, it wouldn't be fair to really call this a murder mystery show, because you know, you see the murder at the beginning of the episode, so it's kind of like Columbo, where it's not a whodunit, but a how catch 'em is what they call them sometimes. But every episode is kind of standalone and episodic, although there is somewhat of a overarching story. But this did work pretty well for a Gateway Episodes format, since they are more standalone than the miniseries that we were doing last season. But all that to say, Alan, I decided to bring you along on this Gateway episode. What did you think of this episode?
So I kind of want to preface something before I go into it. Did you ever watch Russian Doll?
I fucking love Russian Doll, and it's one of the main reasons I wanted to watch this, because I'm such a big Natasha Lyonne fan, and she has a big creative influence on both shows.
So, I didn't see the newest season. I think that they did a second season of Russian Doll, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I saw the first season, and I remember I really dug it a lot. And the weirdest thing about it was that it left a horrible taste in my mouth. And I was like, that's so weird that, like, it was a good show. Like, how could it be bad? I will say I wish they didn't have a second season. I thought it was great on its own season, first season. But anyways, I kind of realized something watching this episode. I do not like Natasha Lyonne's acting.
Really? Okay.
It's weird because I've seen her in other things, and, well, I should say this. I've seen her in things from way back when, and I always felt she was a solid actress. And then Russian Doll, and then this show, Poker Face, this episode kind of cemented that there's something about her acting that I really do not like. And that's kind of the main thing that I was kind of like, not too hyped about when I started watching the episode. It started little by little, kind of just how the mystery was unfolding. It was kind of unfolding for me too, where I was like, oh shit, I do not like her as an actress at all. And she wrote part of the, I think she wrote the episode and directed the episode.
Yes, she did.
And she does a great job. Like, it's a fucking great episode. Like, I like that, you know, it was kind of like a Phil Tippett kind of character.
Yeah, Nick Nolte definitely plays someone who is clearly very Phil Tippett, and he's basically making Mad God.
Yeah, and it's great. I love the story. Like, it was so cool. I really love that. And I'm a big fan of shows and films that are based around making films and shows, you know, like 30 Rock or something. And I was like, man, this is great. And the thing that made me realize that I was like, I don't like her acting is that her in front of Nick Nolte, when they're like bouncing off of each other, she kind of does this like, you know, hey, it's me. Like, she has this fucking accent, like, hey, what's going on? Hey, whatever, you fucking Phil Tippett. And I'm like, oh, I fucking hate that. So I was like, damn. Yeah, right off the bat, it's the premise is great. I do want to ask some things. So her ability, is it just an ability, or is it supernatural, or she just is really good at figuring it out? Because it seems very Sherlock Holmes-ish.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Very Sherlock Holmes-ish. It's it's not a superpower or like any kind of supernatural ability. And that's something she does say. She's like, "Ah, it's not supernatural. You know, it's just a thing I can do. Yeah, you know, I'm like, yes, I see somebody. I can tell. Hey, you're not. You're bullshit. You know, you're bullshit. You know." Mm. So yeah, that she just can like tell when someone is lying, essentially, even over tape or video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminded me of that show. Oh God, I think it's called Lie to Me. I think so. I watched it very, very passively, like casually. Mm-hmm. I remember the one thing that stood out was like he knew when somebody was lying over the phone, mm-hmm. because he's like, I can tell that guy's smiling, and I was like, what the fuck? Okay. That's a little hard to believe, but okay. But this was like, I feel like maybe she could tell by just like the vocal kind of like or tics or anything, microaggressions. Of course, but there was things that I really liked. Like I will say, like I said, I liked the storyline. I liked the how to catch him, because that's pretty much, I feel like, Rian Johnson, what he did in Knives Out, where it's all kind of revealed there right at the start. You're like, oh, this is how it happened. I mean, well, it's kind of a whodunit as well, but yeah, I feel like
switches back and forth, yeah, between the two, yeah, and Knives Out, yeah.
I haven't seen the second one yet. I've been dying to watch that one.
Really good. Really good movie.
But, yeah, I really enjoyed the premise of it. It's just, yeah, her acting was a little, it sticks with you. Like I said, it's kind of like it leaves a weird taste in your mouth.
Okay, just because I honestly loved her act. I have always been a really big fan of her as an actress, you know, going back to me being like a teenager and seeing her in the American Pie movies, and she's obviously in movies like But I'm a Cheerleader. But yeah, like you said, she's also a very talented writer and director, as you saw she directed this episode. But the reason that I thought of you, Alan, and I've been wanting to talk about this show ever since I watched it, and originally I had planned on doing it as a microdose episode. So basically, for anyone who's listening who's not sure what that is, we do like a short TikTok show where it's basically a 3-minute review. And I was like, you know what? This is too much. Like, I have to talk about this more in depth than the 3-minute review. So I've got to put out a bonus episode of Gateway episodes. And as soon as I saw this episode, I was like, this is it. This is such, like, all the episodes are good. They're all very standalone. They're all very interesting. But this one just enraptured me so much with the fact that you do get that. You do find out what happened at the beginning with the person who's killed, but there's all these twists. There's a second murder, and then there's you find out that Cory and Topanga's daughter got murdered in the past. I will say that, like, really great guest cast in every one of these episodes. This one particularly, we mentioned Nick Nolte, and I just mentioned Rowan Blanchard, who plays the mermaid actress. You've also got Cherry Jones, and then Tim Russ, who I recognize from Star Trek Voyager, and then Luis Guzman. Always great to see him. But sorry, tangent. But yeah, it's really great to, it's just such a captivating, interesting story that you think you know the mystery, but then there's all these different twists and turns, and you're not sure what's going to happen. And the way it's shot is very interesting. The way they make grainy footage, like you mentioned, Alan, it's a show about the kind of movie making process, and there's obviously all these stand-ins. There's the Phil Tippett character. There's also ALM, so it's clearly ILM, you know? Stand-in for that. There's even a shot in where they do the montage, like, that's Jurassic Park. And then you have the character who some people have brought up is very much the Cherry Jones character is very much probably a Kathleen inspired character, and probably people think that Rian Johnson maybe didn't have the greatest experience working on The Last Jedi with her. And also, there's some speculation that her and her husband, Frank Marshall, who were producers on the Twilight Zone movie and kind of helped, you know, smooth over, let's just say, the tragedy that happened on that set. So this is probably taking a little bit of inspiration from that. So there's a lot of inside baseball type stuff going on with all the behind the scenes Hollywood stuff. But yeah, it's also got all this movie magic stuff. And Alan, you being the practical effect guy, I was like, I've got to talk to Alan about this episode, because this is all about practical effects. And I didn't find this out until later. all the Phil Tippett inspired things are actually made by the real Phil Tippett. So,
that's awesome.
Like, yeah. So, I don't know. Did you have any thoughts on the kind of the stuff about this that's all about movie magic?
Oh, I love it. Like, I absolutely love it. I was just rewatching the 101 scariest moments in horror, like the Shudder one. And I love when some of the makeup artists talk about like how certain things were done and everything. And I just gobble that stuff up. I absolutely love it. And just seeing all the cool, like, practical effects stuff. And I'm glad to hear that it was Phil Tippett, because I'm like, it's really obvious. I mean, for, you know, for someone who's a big fan of film and cinema, like stuff like that, you immediately kind of go, yeah. But no, I love it, man. I love the detail. Like you said, that ALM or LAM, ILM stuff, like, and then especially since you and I are big fans of Light and Magic documentary, it's just stuff that we like. I think we just love to eat it up. And just the process of it all is really fun. And even that scene where, I don't even know her name, Natasha Lyonne's character.
Charlie.
Yeah, there you go. Her character, she's eating like the fake blood and she made a sandwich out of it. She's like, oh my God, it's so sweet. And I was like, that's true. Like when I used to make fake blood, it's very sweet. It's corn syrup. I mean, obviously he probably had some kind of like super cool Hollywood elaborate kind of version. But when she said that, I was like, yeah, I agree. It is usually very sweet. And I was like, that's awesome. Like just the little things. Is the whole show like based in that? Like in making film and TV, or is it only this episode specifically?
It's only this episode specifically. Each episode it kind of draws inspiration from different murder mystery type tropes and stuff like that. The episode after this, which is I think this one's my favorite episode of the season for sure, but the one after this is a close, like this is the third last episode. The last three are all incredible, and the one directly following this one is basically a kind of Hateful Eight type thing. There's the episode two episodes before this is kind of a dinner theater type thing with like Tim Meadows in it. So every episode kind of draws on a different murder mystery kind of story.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. See, that's the thing that like did draw me, because I actually had interest before you had brought it up. And it was kind of like in the back of my mind, and I was like, yeah, maybe I'll give it a shot. And this was just the perfect time. Like it all kind of just came down together. And I really dig that. I really dig that as if even the title card, Poker Face, it felt very like old, you know, pre-80s kind of title card, where it has that graininess and even the logo's kind of shaky. And then it's like the copyright is in the MX, whatever, yeah. All that. And I was like, okay, cool. And yeah, I dug that a lot. I dug that aspect of the show. So I really do like the whole murder mystery. I was kind of worried it was going to be like a typical kind of police procedural, murder procedural type of show.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a good jumping off point to kind of get. I mean, I feel like it was you kind of catered the episode for me to watch, so I was kind of like, all right, cool. But I feel like it was a good jumping off point. It doesn't really go too much into Charlie's character. I feel like it's very, you just pick it up on the go. Like, you're like, okay, she can tell when people lie, and she kind of gets involved in these things, and go. Like, you're right into it, right into the story, which I really liked a lot. I really appreciated that, because sometimes when they're trying to introduce a character and you kind of get into it, you're kind of like, oh, I want to get to the good stuff. And this was right into it right away, pulls you in.
Yeah, definitely. And I think despite how I think the first episode is really good, it is a little bit of like, okay, there is a lot of information that you get and you kind of learn like about her and her ability, and then, you know, why she has to kind of end up going to all these different places. But this episode, like you said, you are in it, and she is just like thrust into this mystery, and there's all these different threads, and you know some things before she does, but then she starts to figure them out, and you see her and Luis Guzman put the pieces together. which all leads to that really, in my opinion, incredible finale. And like you said, I love the old school way that the logos look at the beginning. It's a little bit grainy. I love the way that last scene, when she's kind of like starting to unravel, the Cherry Jones character is starting to lose it. And she, see, it's very old Hollywood where she sees Nick Nolte out in the crowd and then she's deteriorating. And then when she goes, they show the thing on her turning off the light bulb on the big screen and her just walking down the aisle and all the monsters are there looking at her and it's really grainy footage. And you just see her go over and you see the film reel end. I thought that was amazing. Like that was a perfect way to end. It's so creepy and spooky. I mean, what did you think of all that?
I loved how theatrical it was. You have to. I mean, I feel like Nick Nolte's character, right off the bat, when he made the Medusa head have the film reel in it, I was just like, oh, this is going to be like a big reveal. I kind of saw what was happening. I was like, watch, it's going to be like a in public reveal, and of course it was, but I really loved how theatrical it was. Like it was just like on the screen, and then she thinks she sees like his ghost, or she thinks she sees him in the crowd, and then I love how they put the bust of the first victim just right there for her to see, and then she's like, oh, like she's like tripping, and oh my god, I can't. I just love that. Like it's so melodramatic and so theatrical, but I feel like it's a perfect kind of irony, because it's like you've worked in this business where you're creating drama and scares and thrills and everything like that. So it's great that like they kind of threw it back at her face. So it's just like,
yeah,
here you go, bitch. And then at the end of it, she dies like her ex-husband did, just falls off. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of like poetic justice in a way where you're like, that's what you get, you know, the perfect revenge. But I mean, I'm sure the characters weren't trying to do that. They were like, oh shit, they just were trying to get her to expose herself. But I really that was a great finale. Like I do like that it feels like a little short movie.
That's one
of the best.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, with that all being said, then are you now interested in going back and seeing these other short movies and seeing the rest of this story? Do you want to step through the gateway to Poker Face?
That's the $64,000 question, because I really like the premise and I like the genre and I like the everything that you've been telling me. But my biggest gripe again is just Natasha Lyonne. Like I don't know where she kind of got this like I have to do this like accent fucking thing. I feel like the movies and shows that I've seen her in before, she didn't do that. And I don't know if it's like this weird sense of like I'm the shit now, you know, like I congrats to her success and everything she's done. You know, she's like huge now, but sometimes it just seems like she has to. In Russian Doll and in this, she's like, hey, what's going on? Hey, it's me. I'm Charlie. Hey,
I can know what's going on. New York. I thought she really was from New York. And that was
she from New York?
I think so. I think that's her actual voice. I could be wrong.
I don't know. I forgot to look it up.
I just looked her up on Wikipedia. She was born in New York, New York City.
It's weird because it sounds like she's doing an accent on purpose. It's not like natural, like she's like going out of her way to be like, hey, what's good, what the fuck, forget about
it's
it.
Like I always think of like a Werner Herzog where it's like this is not a real voice that anyone has, you know.
Yeah, like you're just like, what, like why the fuck are you doing sounds, that,
you know?
Yeah, and maybe that's what it is, but I will say like her acting in this particular episode, it was just like Nick Nolte, he's just seasoned and he's been in the business longer. And he just like when they're talking to each other, it's so black and white. Like he's just so solid and he's doing a great job. And then the other character, the murderer, she again also just feels like she's like, I know what I'm doing. You know, she's doing a great job. And then just Tasha just has this like, I don't know how to explain it. It just kind of like it's like you take a shot of like your favorite alcohol, but there's that burn. And it feels like that every time. Yeah, like Fireball, you throw it back and you're like, that was good, but like, ugh, it's there, it sticks with you. And I don't know, that's this whole time before we were recording, that's what I've been thinking this whole time. I'm like, do I want to keep watching this? But she's kind of like, she's that barrier you kind of have to deal, or not barrier, but that like obstacle you kind of have to deal with, where you're just like, God damn, this is a great premise. You know, I like Rian Johnson, but motherfucker, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm like giving too much hate. I'm not trying to hate on her at all. Like, I am. I don't know. That's the thing. I just don't know, man. Like, I really dug it, but it's one of those rare occurrences where just someone's presence or acting just kind of gets in the way, and you're like, I don't know. I really, truly don't know. I don't know. Has there ever been someone on your show that's felt that way, or has been on the in between?
I can't think of anybody else who was in between. I mean, maybe I have actually. I remember when somebody introduced me to Star Trek Generations, and I was like, this is really good, but a barrier that I had was there's just so much of it. Mm-hmm. So I've been there, I guess, where it's been something I was like, yeah, I could see myself getting into it, but like, it's a commitment. So not, you know, a very different issue, but yeah, I can relate.
Yeah.
Not to disliking Natasha Lyonne. I just gotta keep saying that, you know, we're just, obviously I respect your opinion, but we are just worlds apart on her. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I'm such a fan of hers. And I will say too, if, you know, that's your barrier is her, there are, just like this episode, every episode has insane guest stars. Like, there's multiple people I think that have just been nominated for Academy Awards this year that are on the show. Hong Chao and then in the next episode you have Stephanie Hsu. Both are nominated for Academy Awards. You've got people like Tim Blake Nelson, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Chloe Sevigny, and that's just to name just a couple people. Adrian Brody's in the first episode, and kind of the quote unquote big bad is Ron Perlman. So if she's a barrier to you, there's lots of, every episode has this great cast of, mm-hmm. just like this one did, a really great actors and great character actors.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was kind of my big draw when I saw, mm-hmm. like, the ads, where I was like, man, there's a lot of good stuff in it. Like, what I really liked, too, is that I thought it was going to be, like, on mainstream television, but I guess it's, like, a Peacock exclusive.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they can kind of go all out, mm-hmm. as much as they can, you know, like, even the MA, like, it doesn't even feel like it's rated MA. It feels like it's kind of just, like, it's MA just because of some things, you know, like,
yeah, there's a little bit of violence, and she says shit and fuck a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's basically it. So it was kind of, mm-hmm. like, I feel like they're using a lot of that for the big cast and all the, I mean, everything in general just looks great. I feel like it's like 90% of it is great.
Mm-hmm.
Just that 10% Natasha Lyonne. But, oh man, it's tough. I mean, I guess if I, you know, 9 out of 10 isn't bad. So, mm-hmm. I guess I will say, like, I don't know if I'll do it anytime soon,
mm-hmm.
but I think I will one day probably get back to it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause like I said, the episode itself was fucking fantastic. And I really dug the premise. I was like hooked. Like, I legit almost watched the next one, but I was like, oh shit, I gotta get ready. But yeah, I think I can see myself. I can see myself, not anytime soon, but I can see myself probably coming back to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was, I would say, you know, I usually like to binge things, but I'm really glad I watched this one week to week, because the episodes are so standalone, you know, and getting to come one, like, every Thursday to it's another episode of this murder mystery show, or this murder show, I should just say, not really mystery show. It was so cool to come back to, and I actually just watched, right when you were watching this episode, I just watched the season finale, which was also phenomenal, because it's this today, as we're recording, so probably yesterday, but by the time it's out, was the final episode of the season just dropped. There's going to be a season 2, which I'm clearly looking forward to. Did just 10 episodes. I'm always a fan of that. You know, you get in, you tell your story, you get out. Doesn't feel like it's overstaying its welcome at all. But yeah, this is surprisingly, it's a show that I was very intrigued on, but the more and more that I've watched it, and all of these episodes have been great. This, like I said, was my favorite episode, and it just drew me in. Funny enough, I actually kind of did unintentionally, I did a gateway episode to my mom, because as we were talking before we got on mic, I was at my parents' house a couple days ago, and that's when I decided to rewatch this episode. And my mom was in the room, and I was like, yeah, I'm doing this as a gateway episode for Alan. And she watched it. She was so into it. She was like, this is so good. She's like, okay, I gotta watch. She's like, I'm gonna start watching with this dad. We're gonna start over with episode one. So I actually got my mom to also step through the gateway too. So I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, I don't know, man. Any other thoughts on the episode or the show?
I'm very intrigued. Like I said, it does pull you in. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It does pull you in, and it really catches your attention. I would like to see. I feel like as of late, we've been getting a lot of shows that I feel like they're very influenced by what you see in theatrically. Like now it's like we have to have this massive overarching story. And like I said, one of my worries going in, I thought it was going to be like a typical procedural show. But I really feel like a lot of shows got to take influence from it, because I feel like people really do like one-shot stories. Mm-hmm. Like they can be great. They can be really well done. And like you said, if it's only 10 episodes, I feel like that's perfect, because 10 episodes, you get enough. You watch for a couple weeks, 1 week at a time. I feel like it's kind of like when we were growing up, we didn't have Netflix and everything, so we didn't binge everything. So we had to wait a week. And I feel like back then, yes, we had to. They had to make seasons super long because they had to keep going, 24 episodes a season. But I feel like now this like streaming, you have the opportunity to watch it whenever you want, when it drops. It's great. Like 1 week at a time kind of thing. And I feel like a lot of shows do need to learn this. Like you can do great stories, one-shot stories, but you don't have to make this big old overarching story where it kind of affects the process of every episode. Like it kind of becomes bothersome in a way where you're just like, ah, damn, like it's great when you can have your cake and eat it too, essentially. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Go on.
Oh no, sir. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, and this is really the show where you get to have your cake and eat it too, because every episode is very episodic, but there is this looming overarching story, which, while it's not like taking anything away from the individual episodes, there are things that are referenced in it. Like when she talks about her friend that got murdered, like that's an mm-hmm. important thing that happened earlier on. And, the fact that she is on the run, you know, that is this thing that is always kind of looming above her. There's always this threat that is surrounding her. And you see her in each episode go from place to place and meet all these different people, because you always have that just at the back of your mind, like, oh no, he has to leave this place now. This other murder happened. Something else is going on, because, even though you might not see them in the episode, that there is this larger threat, but it doesn't ever, like you're saying, take away from this one story we're telling here. And it's because it's just 10 episodes, it doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, there's just so much of this. It's like, no, there's just enough here to be really good. We're spending enough on each of these 10 episodes to make them really high quality.
It's a balance. That's what mm-hmm. I was trying to get at. It's a balance of like, because there are times when you watch those like really, 24 episode seasons where there is both. Mm-hmm. There's the monster of the week, freak of the week, whatever you want to call it. And you have the overarching story. And then there's times where you're like, fuck, man, the overarching story is really great. I'm fucking tired of this weekly filler shit. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the British do it really well. I feel like they have a great handle on it with their television, where they know how to balance it. And I feel like that's what we need more over here in American television, is that perfect balance of here you get these cool, unique stories a week, but you also have a good balance of the overarching story as well. Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to get.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's something that in the past couple of years with streamers, and I think particularly of like especially season one of The Mandalorian was really good about that, for example. Yeah. Season one of Mandalorian, he would just kind of go on at whatever adventure on this planet, but, you know, there's the overarching story. I'm curious to see, because we're just barely into season two or season three of The Mandalorian, if it ends up being still holding on to that kind of episodic feel while having the overarching story. So I hope it does manage to keep that balance that is so hard to strike. But I do think, particularly with streaming stuff, and the maybe the streaming shows that release week to week, unlike Netflix, which drops everything at once, you get things like Peacock and Hulu and Disney Plus, which dropped week to week, I think are really able to lean into that really well.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about it. I know a lot of people sometimes complain that they're like, oh, I wish they would drop everything. But I think, too, it's the draw. It's the draw that makes you want more. Just makes... it makes it taste better. It just, you just take it in a lot better, and it just feels more satisfying, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, I guess that about wraps it up. Yeah, this was a stellar episode of TV. I mean, we're not very far into 2023, but it's definitely been my favorite episode of TV in 2023, my favorite show of 2023, and I had a great time with this episode, with the finale, and you know, you can just watch an episode of this too, is the thing. You can just kind of plop in, like, hey, watch this episode 8, like I did with you, like I did with my mom. Watch it, it's really good. But yeah, with that, I'll just say, Alan, thank you again for coming on.
Absolutely, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and for anybody who out there who's listening, we also do another podcast. We do the podcast Underrated, where the two of us, as well as our other co-host Ariel, talks about underrated movies, or ones that are underseen or underappreciated and have slipped under the radar. So that comes out every other Monday, so that's a little bit more regular than this show is right now. I also do the show Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones, where I talk about the MCU whenever there's a new property that's released in the MCU. Ariel also does her show You've Never Seen, definitely check that out. And then, like I mentioned, we're doing some more stuff on TikTok. We've got our Gateway our Microdose mini series or review series that we're doing with little mini reviews, so that's been a lot of fun. But yeah, look us up, we're the Undercast Company on all the social media apps, so check us that out there, everywhere. Until next time, until, you know, I decide to do another season or another bonus episode of this, take it easy, guys.